Thanks for tuning in to Phage Therapy today, and welcome back. FDA plays a crucial part in applications of any biotech product, and interacting with the FDA requires a certain set of skills. If you have been listening to us, you know that we lightly touched upon this topic before in previous episodes, but today we're having an expert with us, Dr. Austin Terwilliger. After finishing his PhD in integrative molecular and biomedical science at Baylor College of Medicine, he moved on to a postdoctoral position in 2017 at the same institute in Dr. Anthony Marasso's group. And since last year, he has taken on another role as the Director of Operations at the Taylor Labs. Dr. Terwilliger, thanks for joining us, and it's great to have you here.
Yeah, hi, Stephen. It's good to be here. Thank you for thinking of us and having us on. I'm excited to be a part of this brand new podcast. Thank you.
Great. So before we jump into all the phage business, I would really like to learn more a little bit about you, because I know this on your CV, in your graduate work, you mostly work on microbial pathogens, these areas. But how did you get into learning about phages? And also, how did you get in touch with all the regulatory, how the interaction operations? So tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, it's kind of a long path. I guess I'll just start from when I was young. Really, I grew up in central Pennsylvania, a very rural area, but there's a ton of nature there: lakes, creeks, forests, mountains, and I think I really had developed a passion for living things there, and that's kind of where and when I knew I wanted to have some kind of life in science. And I did my undergraduate work and research at the University of Pittsburgh, which, as you might know, where a very famous phage researcher works now, Graham Havell.
Right.
I actually did some brief work in Craig Peeble's lab. His lab was close to Graham Havell. So it's kind of weird how sort of things all sort of come around that I'm working in phage now. But I went to Baylor College of Medicine, where I did my thesis work, as you said, in Anthony's lab, studying the bacterial pathogenesis of Bacillus anthracis. This is the bacteria that causes anthrax, and hopefully a lot of listeners know what anthrax is. But my thesis pretty much was asking a very basic question, which is, what is Bacillus anthracis eating when it's inside you? It grows to great densities and great numbers at time of death, and it infects pretty much any mammal, really. And so I'm just wondering, with the conservation of mass, where is all that mass coming from? What are they feeding on that is allowing them to grow to those numbers? And well, when I finished my thesis, I first started out by looking at some more typical routes that a newly minted PhD might take, whether that's a field application scientist, a medical science liaison, or some type of research coordinator. So I looked at these jobs for a bit. I applied to some. I interviewed for some, but nothing really felt right. And it was around that time that Anthony, my thesis mentor and the faculty founder for Taylor Labs at Baylor College of Medicine, he approached me with the idea for Taylor Labs. We didn't have the name for it yet, and it wasn't all fleshed out, really, but it was sort of that notion that maybe we should focus more on phage. And Dr. Green, who you had previously interviewed for this podcast, she did her thesis work on phage in his lab, and I hadn't really thought about phage till that point. And it was one of those things where, the more I asked questions and the more I read about it, and the more I looked at the state of the field, I felt like, man, this just makes too much sense for it to be not as popular as it currently was at that point or sort of is right now. And granted, right. there's a lot of science that still needs to be done, and we'll probably talk about later in this episode. But that was sort of what really struck me the most, that from a scientific point of view, using phage in certain infections, cases, and situations made a lot of sense. This need didn't really seem to be being filled much, and so that was what had first excited me about helping to form the Taylor Labs, and so that's how I got to where I currently am.
Fabulous, great. So my follow-up question will be, as the director of operation at the Taylor Lab, starting from a patient being diagnosed and as physician decided to reach out, what are the parties that are being at play here, and how long is the process like this to go through with?
That is a great question, and I was wondering, do you mind if we take some time to sort of backtrack and focus on problem in terms of how we get to the point of a patient or doctor reaching out to a group like us to receive phage?
Definitely.
Okay.
Let's talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. So, really, what we're dealing with is a problem of change on a number of levels. First of all, the bacteria is capable of great change. It can mutate at a great rate due to processes known as transduction, transformation, just de novo mutations in its genome, and horizontal gene transfer through conjugation with other cells. This is the mutagenic tetrasect, as we call it at Taylor. And this is how bacteria are able to adapt and evolve at a very high and alarming rate away from the modern treatments that we have for them. And this is partly why historically pharmaceutical companies are investing less and less in developing antibiotic drugs, because you come out with some new drug on the market, and sometimes just in a matter of several weeks or months, already bacteria have found a way to evolve against that treatment. There's another level of change with just our human body as well, right? We inherit thousands, tens of thousands of mutations from our parents, but our bodies as well, over time, right, we'll pick up some more mutations as well, just from living, just from life, right? And so everyone is really different, and it makes it very difficult to have a standard of care treatment that is going to treat all people, right? So when you take into account the rate of change of these bugs that we're trying to kill, as well as how truly individual and unique every person is, you will realize that standard of care options aren't going to treat every person. It doesn't matter what that standard of care is. There's always going to be people falling through the cracks for who that treatment won't work. And so there's, on some level, a need we feel for personalized medicine. And that's where phage come in, that we view phage as personalized medicine for multi-drug resistant microbial infections.
Right.
And so that is how patients come to us. And so now, if I'm able to remember to backtrack to your first question in terms of the team involved, right, in terms of, you know, how many balls are being juggled at the same time, how many different teams need to come together in order to be able to treat some patient, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, well, first, of course, the doctor is the sponsor for these expanded access or compassionate use cases. They are filling out forms for patient history and giving us a detailed treatment plan that the nurses and pharmacy have to carry out. We can talk about that a bit later, but there's those teams as well. We at Taylor, as the manufacturer of the phage cocktail, we are going to provide them with CMC data. This is chemical manufacturing and control information. It's basically everything anyone would want to know about how we found these phages, how we sequence their genomes and characterize by different measures, and how we tested the final phage cocktail to ensure that it is sterile and likely not toxic or harmful to the patient. So that is what we hand over. And then the final team, excuse me, which is the FDA, the regulatory team in this case, they review all this information that's given to them from ourselves and doctors, and they review and comment, and they might need further clarification or testing. And that really goes by a case-by-case basis, which we can talk about later, that there's sort of a sliding scale based on need and how dire of a state that patient is in. And all of this goes towards building a living record, a document of the state of the patient, the perceived risks of both infection and treatment, and the development of the phage cocktail.
Right. So about this process with the FDA, I'm wondering, like, how long does it usually to go? Like, are there many back and forths in this process? And as you mentioned, like, the patients, I know usually when you select the patient, you also have to concern whether how stable the patient's situation is. But still, like, time is definitely a key player over here.
Yeah.
So, like, how would the FDA took too long, maybe, you think? Or, but I think that is just a necessary process to ensure what is being applied to be safe and like a safe check.
Yeah. Again, another good question. Thank you for bringing that back up. Time was the last factor I'd left out from process, but I hinted at how there is a sliding scale based on case and need. So typically what we would look for in a patient, or what most of us would think would be a good candidate for phage therapy, is someone who is stable but chronically infected with a multi-drug resistant bacteria, and there aren't really many options left. So this is someone who has had a bacterial infection for quite some time, months to years. This has not changed over time. It's what we would call a clonal type of infection. It's pretty much the same pathogen and same strain. They have been given a standard of care, treatment, and drugs, but that hasn't been able to clear their infection. And that otherwise this patient would be mostly fine and healthy. That really, most of all of the issues that they are dealing with come from that single pathogen and infection that they are suffering from. That is what we would think as typically a good candidate for phage therapy. Now, timelines can differ based on need. So let's start with the shortest timeline, where things are really dire for the patient. So maybe not the best candidate for phage therapy because they are not stable, but they really don't have much hope or any kind of option left. This patient might pass in the next several weeks or months if not given any new kind of option. In that case, if there are phage that are virulent against that patient strain, meaning that the phage are able to kill that bacteria that the patient has, And we have these phage previously purified, and they're and their genomes have been sequenced, so we know that there are no red flags there, any undesirable features in the genome. They really look like therapeutic quality phages. If all of those conditions are met, we can rapidly make a phage cocktail and test it, and be able to deliver it to the doctor and their team in a matter of weeks. In that case, the doctor would be applying for an emergency IND or an EIND case. Now, if the situation is less dire, most often then the doctor is going to be applying for an IND for expanded access of treatment. This IND stands for an investigational new drug. In that case, the standards change, and the FDA and regulatory groups might have more concern and oversight over what is being tested. You know, what has been verified prior to being able to treat that patient. But again, here our timeline is going to depend whether we have phage on hand. Now, we've been building a library of phages against what are commonly known as the escape pathogens, and we have phage against all of those species in our library. And the more that our library grow and we characterize these phages, the more purified phage we're going to have on stock. If we have purified and characterized phage on stock, we can formulate a phage cocktail that day, that week, and get the ball rolling pretty quickly. And in that case, you're looking at a span of just a few months from ask to treatment, or from when we get that patient strain in lab to test for phages to us sending that cocktail to treatment. That would be feasible in 2 to 4 months. But if we don't have those phage on stock, if we need to spend time purifying phage, we can talk about that more later too, or if we need to go find new phages from the environment or from other samples, and we need to take the time to purify, to extract DNA from these phages and then sequence them and analyze their genomes and that prep to verify that it looks like a therapeutic quality phage and prep, right? That is going to add a considerable amount of time to that timeline. And there, you are looking at least 6 months from ask to treatment. So those are the various timelines that we typically deal with.
Yeah. So actually, one question that just came up to me is about this special time these things are happening. As I'm aware, like Taylor was also found in 2020. So has COVID actually made an impact on this? Because with more resource dedicated to all the COVID-related technologies, or maybe like this actually for the new ways of FDA dealing with different cases, their systems, do you see any changes COVID's making to this progress?
Well, like our bacteria and virus friends, we learn to adapt to whatever is thrown at us, really. Certainly at the beginning of the pandemic, early to mid 2020, there was a lot of concern about bringing patients in for treatment, that no one wanted to risk that at that time. But as hospitals and institutions got more comfortable dealing with COVID, and as we have great options for vaccines in place now, that concern has somewhat lifted now, and you see these patients returning to the hospital for treatment. It didn't change the rate at which we were being asked for phage therapy. again, there's always people for whose standard of care isn't going to work. And, you know, in a world of 7 billion people, or even just a country like the US of 330 million people, right, there's still going to be a lot of people that sadly fall into that boat. So it didn't change the ask. But at Taylor Labs, like I said, we adapted along with everything else. And we actually built a great collaboration with the Houston Health Department and Rice University here in Houston also to develop methods to track the presence of the SARS-CoV-2 virus in wastewater, and to eventually develop that into a kind of early warning system for the city of Houston. So we're very proud of our efforts there too.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so one point I want to pick up from there, as you mentioned, basically the asked, or in this, like the patients over there actually is always there. But so in an ideal case, like the fastest way, everything is going smoothly. Let's say every patient can get if they require phage therapy. But what would they see in the current problem, like in the current situation? What are some of the resistors, like biggest resistors that are really slowing this process down? It seems like the patients are not having no problem accepting this kind of treatment.
Yeah. Yeah. Great question again. I think there are three main pillars that I see, or rather hurdles that are challenges that should be addressed. A couple of them are practical and one is more scientific. So the first practical one really is just setting standards. Standards for how you sequence your phages, what kind of methods are being used, what kind of coverage depth, you know, is needed to be able to analyze your genome and to be able to infer how pure that prep is. Standards for how you manufacture the phage and purify it, and standards for what kind of characterization and testing is needed in order to get to treatment. So all of those standards need to be set at different levels and clear in order for businesses and labs and groups to know how to navigate this area and get to the point of treatment. The second practical hurdle, I'm going to get a bit philosophical here for the couple, I hope that is fine. So let's start by thinking of how powerful just language is, right? Just what we're doing now, right? Being able to convey and spread ideas amongst ourselves and groups, right? Think of for our ancestors, what the printing press did for us, right? Prior to that, information could only be spread, you know, by word of mouth or written on tablets or stones. It couldn't really spread, right? That printing press allowed the power of language to be realized and spread around the world, right? A modern version of this is the computers that we're using right now to talk to each other, right? Where would they be? Probably still in entire rooms if we hadn't developed the microchips and processing technology to keep allowing them to get smaller and smaller to fit on our desks and pockets. And for something that might be closer for the medical field here, we can think of how the first modern vaccines were made with Jenner, right? Basically picking scabs and transferring them from animal to person or person to person. It took the technology of cell culture in the 20s and 30s to be able to scale up and mass produce of vaccines to give us the a gift of being able to almost entirely eradicate smallpox and polio, right? And so my point here is that the promise of any great technology is limited by the means in which it is made. And I think the same is true for phage therapy, and especially for personalized phage therapy. If you want to, you know, to de novo build a new personalized medicine to treat a patient and to be able to fight this rate of drastic change, right? The rate of change at which a pathogen can adapt and evolve to a treatment and inside a patient. If you want to be able to constantly be able to compete with that and hit a moving target, we need to develop the technologies and methods and standards to rapidly find, purify, characterize, and deliver phage. So that would be the second practical hurdle. And the third and final one is just doing good science. There needs to be more science on phage therapy, and especially we feel at the interface of the phage and bacteria and patient, right? That is a very intense and dynamic battle that is going on inside a patient that is difficult to model and to be able to predict, really. And that's definitely a challenge in this field, that it's still difficult for us to say whether any phage or phage cocktail is going to be useful for any person or infection or case, right? We need good science to guide and lead the way to better help us understand that battle that is going on so that we can build better phage cocktails and treat patients more effectively.
Absolutely. Those are some great insights.
Thank you.
And take a step back from here. As you mentioned before, in these processes, the science is really important here. So I'm wondering, is science a big concern from the FDA's perspective when they have feedbacks for you guys? What are some of the biggest concerns they have in their feedback?
Yeah, as I mentioned, that is constantly changing, and there's a sliding scale. So to, again, just set up this framework, if you have a patient in dire need that may pass in the next few weeks and doesn't have many options left, phage are generally seen as a safer option and choice in that case. And there's less of a concern of all the testing and verification that went into building that cocktail, because this patient needs that treatment now, right? So that I think that pretty much makes sense. When you move that scale towards stable patients, or just to the population in general, treating more healthy people, right? Those standards shift. So there is more scrutiny about how the phage were manufactured, how you analyze that genome and prep, what tests did you run to try to figure out how virulent that phage cocktail is, how effective it is at killing that patient's strain. And that has also changed as we have grown. The feeling that I get is that this is similar to a very long review process with publishing a paper. Where that endpoint is, no one knows really, right? So we sort of come with, hey, here's are the phages that we have for this cocktail. This is how we made and tested them? You know, what are your thoughts here, right? And the FDA, you know, with the concern of the patient in mind, gives us feedback. They want us to do something to test or to respond towards points A, B, C, D, you know. And so we do that. We go back and forth. And in this process, we are able to incorporate their advice and comments into future cases. We say, okay, we know that they're probably going to ask for this type of test or for this type of clarification because they had done so previously. So we are going to build that into this new case, into this new report that we're going to submit to them. So of course now, you know, in this cyclical kind of process, you answer some questions and then you bring up more questions. So they're satisfied with those answers you've given previously, but there's some finer questions now that they sort of want to figure out. And right. My sense is that all of this is being done because they understand this previous point that we had brought up about what hurdles and challenges are there to bringing phage therapy to more people, and that's standards. They are trying to figure out, along with us, what standards do they feel comfortable with? What standards might they want to set in a future where phage therapy is more common?
Great. One key word I pick up from your talking is the word change. So I feel like because we are a relatively new era comparing to other biotech where there are more money, more focus being put on for tumor research. But because we're relatively new, so the scientists are also learning about these, but so are the FDA, so are the FDA agents, because there are also people sitting behind the screen trying to understand what's going on. I feel like one sense I get from you is that subjectively, even for the FDA, it's still a moving process, it's still evolving, and trying to really set up the standard for this cure.
Yeah, you are certainly right there. That is the sense that I get from this process, that they understand the science, they believe in the promise of phage therapy, so they want to figure out how to do it right.
Perfect. Great. So we're a little short on time, but I still want to touch on another aspect of phage therapy, and that is the reimbursement part. Because I understand Taylor Lab is providing your service at cost, but I still wonder who's paying for this. Is the insurance paying for this? And the reason why I'm asking for this is if the final goal is to find an accessible substitution, or many times people will prefer the in synergy with antibiotics solution, but it should also be a financially accessible one. I'm just wondering what's the amount of cost right now for a patient to go do phage therapy.
Yeah, so this point that you bring up, I feel is why a lot of companies, right, jump towards large-scale phage trials, build cocktails that in theory can treat most people. They aren't moving towards a personalized approach to phage therapy. I definitely want to be clear that I think both approaches are needed and fine, that, you know, we are going to need options that are going to give better options for treatments for more people. You're still going to have the same issue that I first brought up, that there's always going to be people for whose standard of care doesn't work. So they're going to need some more personalized options still. But with this path of a personalized approach to phage therapy and working with single patient cases, there really is no good way, as the system currently stands, for the manufacturer to be reimbursed for all of the work and testing and time and money that went into building that phage cocktail. Now, this is not an area that I know much of, but it basically comes down to coding, right? That hospitals code treatments a certain way. Insurance companies will reimburse based on that coding. there is no set coding for phage therapy, and each cocktail is treated as its own new drug. It's not a quality by design process to be built. Again, each cocktail is its own separate new drug. And that's sort of where things lie. How we are looking to change this, or the kind of future that I might envision to make this different, there can be some sort of agreement that is set up amongst companies, labs, and hospitals in order to provide phage therapy to their patients. So it would be like a subscription kind of setup, really, where the hospital says, hey, you know, we think we are going to have patients that don't really have treatment options for these multi-drug resistant infections. We will pay you a monthly, yearly fee for you to be able to provide phage cocktails to us. I could certainly see something like that working. How we're able to do this is we have the science and other efforts fund us. So Taylor Labs is funded by a few different routes, by seed funding from the Baylor College of Medicine, from your usual scientific grants, as well as research contracts and agreements that we have with companies. So that is where we are funded from, and why we're allowed to sink money into building these phage cocktails to patients. And then we are trying to do good research, good science with these cases when possible, right? Getting back patient samples, being able to test what is going on at that phage and bacteria and patient setting, right? To be able to get the word out in forms of papers, being able to publish and write grants, which can in turn bring in more funding. So we are kind of, we have a very different and cool setup, I think, here. But in terms of an end goal, we're certainly working towards finding new and creative ways to be able to build these phage cocktails and again give them to patients who just don't have much hope.
Great. I guess we're all very excited for your work there at Taylor.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for sharing all these with us, Dr. Twilliger. And I hope we can have you back sometime with more exciting progress.
Oh, yeah. I certainly had a great time, and I'll look forward to being back on sometime in the future. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
That's Dr. Austin Twilliger, Director of Operations at BMC Taylor Labs. I'm Stephen Young, and this is Phage Therapy Today. If you like what you're hearing, follow us to tune into future episodes and give us 5 stars. If you have a story to share or have any feedbacks, feel free to email us at phagetherapytoday@gmail.com. In the end, thanks for listening. Happy holidays.